Welcome, my name is Kevin Gianni, host and creator of The Rockathon, which can be found at www.rockathon.com. That's R-A-W-K-A-T-H-O-N.com. I'm going to be your host for this incredible Rockathon interview. Each one of these interviews is special to me because I feel the experts and I really broke down the impersonal walls of being on stage or in public, and we got to their true essence. I can promise that the content you find in these talks are not what you'll find anywhere else, unless you actually sat down with the experts themselves, one-on-one, and asked them your questions. So please grab a pen and piece of paper, get a filtered glass of water, and be prepared to experience the Rockathon firsthand. Please enjoy the show. So let's start very quickly. There are some people who may not know who you are. So let's start talking about, you know, who you are and how you got into this movement.
Okay. Well, I'm Sherry Soria, and how I got into this movement is a really long story, but I'll try to keep it brief. Uh-huh. I've been a vegetarian chef for about 36 years.
Okay.
I won my first cooking contest when I was 12, and I learned a long time ago that people love you if you make great food. And so I liked that. I liked being popular, I guess, and I love sharing food with people. And because I had a family history of dis-ease, mm-hmm. I learned pretty early in life, in my early 20s, that there was a connection between health and food. So I became a vegetarian in my early 20s, mm-hmm. and since it was rather odd at that time to be a vegetarian, I started sharing vegetarian food with people to get them to come over to my side, and people liked my food, so I started teaching classes. That's how I was able to make friends with people who were interested in eating the way I did. Mm-hmm. I cut out the dairy and the eggs, and pretty soon was teaching vegan cuisine. Always learning more and more as I read from different people about health, how to make my foods even healthier and even tastier. And then I started reading books by Dr. Ann Wigmore. And I had read The Survival into the 21st Century by Victoria Skolinskas many, many years before. But it was so radical to me at that time that the only thing I really gleaned from it was sprouting, which I made a part of my life and my teaching. And making sauerkraut and a few other little things like that, but certainly not eating an all-raw diet. And in fact, when I started reading the teachings of Dr. Ann Wigmore, I realized that I ate very little raw food. Hmm. And I wanted to learn more about raw food. And there was no such thing as gourmet raw food in those days. So I went to the school, to the clinic in Puerto Rico to meet this amazing woman and to learn how she was curing people of incurable diseases using only raw food and wheatgrass juice. That was a big part of it. So I went there with no intention of ever changing the way I was teaching or not cooking anymore. Mm-hmm. That was not a part of my plan. I just wanted to learn more. But while I was there, I saw so many miracles that I couldn't ignore them. And I decided I was never going to teach another cooking class again.
Wow.
And I had a cookbook ready and in the wings to be published, and it was all cooked vegan food. But I just had to shelf it because I couldn't in good conscience ever teach cooking after that. And she told me while I was there that I would be a beacon of light for her teaching. And it just took off like wildfire. I mean, people came from all over the world to learn how to do this with me. And it was delicious, and they felt great. And after Victoris learned about it and started having me prepare foods for events for him.
Okay, so you worked with him.
Well, yeah. Actually, he invited me to cater an event for him. I was catering events for the Essene Gatherings, and mm-hmm. he's an Essene bishop. And I catered a women's festival for him at his retreat in Arkansas. And he just sat me down and said, "You really have to teach what you're doing to chefs. Mm-hmm. Every chef in 4-star restaurants, they should all know how to do what you're doing." I started teaching classes, and the very first class that I taught, I had 45 people mm-hmm. in my class. And they've been full all along. Every time I add new classes, they fill up. We would take 3 days for 17 people to set up a culinary school in a convention center. And we did that many, many times a year at both Brighton Bush Hot Springs and Harbin Hot Springs, because I really thought that I had to entice people to come to the classes, and I thought if I have them at great places, then people will come. But over the years, I always surveyed people to see how can I make these classes better, and what do people want more of, and where would they go, you know, where would they be enticed to go if I were to teach classes somewhere else. And we built a permanent facility in a town that I absolutely love, which is Fort Bragg, mm-hmm. California.
That's great.
And it's just so beautiful there, and our students, even though it takes a bit to get there, our students absolutely love being there. Many of them fall in love with it so much that they move there. So every morning we start out our day with appreciation, and it's so wonderful to be able to start the day out that way because it really sets the tone for the entire day. And everybody has something to appreciate if they just connect with it. It helps them to really feel the day is beautiful and special, and it doesn't really matter what happens. Even if there's a challenge, they can overcome it. And when you really feel like you have some control over your day, you have control over your life. So that means even if some challenge does arise, you're not a victim.
You mentioned Raw Food Kitchen. What do you think are the base? I want to talk raw food prep here. What do you think are the basics that someone should have for raw food prep, and then I want to get into, you know, some of the tricks and tips that you have for,
okay.
for prep.
Yeah. Well, we always set up. We always teach our students how to set up their kitchen because it's really important. Not just the kind of equipment that you need, but even how you set it up and how you manage it. You know, how you rotate your fruits and vegetables and store them. And there's just so many tips that they can learn. And it's just like if you were going to take up tennis, you can just plug away your own way, or you can get the best teacher and cut to the chase. And it is really important to have the right tools, because obviously you don't need a microwave and you don't need an oven, and those things take up a lot of space. And there are some things that you really do need and some things that are nice to have but you don't have to have for a while. So I'm going to start with what you really have to have. Mm-hmm. You have to have a good knife and a good cutting board. That's the basic. You have to have that. And you really should have a blender. And if you can afford to have the best of everything, then you should get a high-speed blender. My favorite is a Vitamix, but some people like a Blendtec. But a high-speed blender. Good knife, and I suggest at least a good chef knife, anywhere from a 6 to a 10-inch chef knife, depending on what feels good in your hand, and a good cutting board. I like bamboo.
Okay,
bamboo is great because you're not going to have mold growing on it. It seals itself when you wash it. It's just really good. It lasts a long time, and I've never had one go. I suggest that people have a food processor because you can make pâtés and you can make crusts for pies and cookies and things like that in a food processor. And you don't have to have an expensive one. If you can afford the best, get a 12-cup Cuisinart. Using a dehydrator is tricky, and you do need to know how to use a dehydrator properly, because a lot of people think the lower temperature they use in a dehydrator, the better, and that's really not true. A dehydrator can become a petri dish and develop mold and bacteria very, very easily. So if you have something that is thick and high in water content, you need to turn it way up in order to get the temperature of the food warm enough to start evaporating out the moisture. And then if you're going to be using a dehydrator, you need to have the right kind of spatula to use. And I like to use the offset spatula. That means that the spatula itself is flat, and then it has a kind of a corner that comes up, and then the handle is flat again.
Oh, okay.
So that it's just ergonomically comfortable and easy for you to work. I see people trying to spread things with little rubber spatulas, and it just takes like 3 or 4 times as long because you're struggling to get a nice, smooth, even finish that you just can't do without the right tools. So there's a lot of tools that we teach students how to use that just make their work so much easier and more efficient, and make the product look more professional too.
Yeah, so you could probably use something like that spatula to really get the thin, like the thin like corn chips that I've seen in that type of
Okay.
Especially things that are going to be thin, like crackers and chips and tortillas. So with tortillas, you want the small offset spatula so that you can just go around. Our students enjoy a rice dish now and then, and so we do bloom wild rice and show them how to do it. It takes about 24 hours soaking in water, about four times the amount of water as the wild rice. Put it in a dehydrator at about 105 so that overnight it will bloom. Now, some kinds of wild rice, if it's not heated quite enough, won't bloom, and you could change the water every day, have it in warm water every day for a week, and it'll still be crunchy. That's because it's truly raw rice.
Oh.
So if it only takes about 24 hours to bloom, which is what most people will manage, then it's been heated a little bit more, and so it blooms more easily. But there are a lot of other kinds of grains that could take the place of rice in somebody's diet. You can make beautiful pilafs, and you can make beautiful breads, scones and cinnamon rolls and all kinds of things with other kinds of grains besides rice. I mean, of course, rice you wouldn't be making scones with anyway. Although some people do use rice flour because they're gluten intolerant. But as far as grains for making pilafs are concerned, you can use quinoa, which is really beautiful, and it sprouts very quickly, within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It's very prolific. It will just sprout really quickly. In fact, quinoa is such a good sprouter, you can almost miss it and it'll sprout.
Okay.
You can almost watch it sprout. It sprouts so easily. So it's a great first thing for people to learn to sprout because you can almost not hurt it.
You can't mess it up, yeah.
Can't mess it up. And it sprouts so quickly that it's not like, you know, you have to remember to rinse it every day for several days and then you might forget and then it gets sour and yeah. Like a lot of other things. Legumes are harder to sprout that way. They need to be rinsed several times, sometimes two or three times a day in order to really not get spoiled.
Do you prefer legumes to grains or grains to legumes? Because I've heard, you know, a lot of people don't like to eat sprouted legumes just because they're...
Yeah, legumes, a lot of people when they first go raw really feel a need. They have a fear of not getting enough protein. And so having some legumes just helps them to alleviate that fear and feel like they're getting enough protein in their diet. And indeed, my new book, Raw Food Revolution Diet, I wrote it with two dietitians, and they did a lot of research to see how the raw food diet, how it measures up to what the RDA requirements are. And a lot of raw fooders stay away from nuts because they think they're too rich. They stay away from legumes and they stay away from grains. And all of those do have protein, so they've got to make sure that they're getting plenty of greens in order to meet those RDA requirements. Now, plenty of raw fooders don't do that, and they get along just fine. But we start to, it's kind of like weaning people, you know. In the beginning, we give them cereal, raw sprouted cereal, but still cereal with a nut milk and fruit and everything. Later on, that's not something that we would be giving them because we would teach them that that's not the best food combining. Yes, they're used to that. Their bodies have become accustomed to it. But as they lighten up and as they detox and as they start to listen to their bodies and recognize how their bodies speak to them when they're eating foods that are harder to digest, and some of those kinds of things could just be a little bit less clear in their thinking, or a little bit more tired in the afternoon, or needing a little more sleep than they would really have to if they'd eaten lighter. It doesn't necessarily mean that they would get sick. There are a lot of levels of health, and the first one is staying, you know, without symptoms, not being symptomatic with disease, but the next one would be how much vitality, how much energy do you have, how much work can you do, you know, how much can you accomplish, and how happy are you, and how connected are you to the world around you. As you lighten up and as you detox more and more, you feel that connection to yourself, to your needs, to the world around you, and all your relationships to nature, to animals, everything. One of our goals is to meet people where they are. We don't make any judgments about how raw people are. I mean, to me, raw is not a religion. It's a choice that we make. Yes, it can help us to be more spiritual beings, but it's not God. they really were skeptical when I first came to them and asked them if they would consider writing this book with me. And they said, well, we don't know if there's been enough peer-reviewed research, because they will not put their name on anything unless the studies are proven in peer-reviewed journals. And so I said, I'll take my chances. Let's do it and see, because I've had enough experience. It's all anecdotal. It's all from the thousands of people who have come through our schools and the stories that I've heard from them about their healing journeys. But I really believe that we can get everything we need and beyond, and it can exceed our needs and heal and detox. And so they were willing to give it a try. And indeed, it took us about 3 years to finish that book.
Wow.
We put a lot of time into it, and it's half recipes, and the other half is really excellent material, research material about the raw vegan diet, and they are swayed, as you call it, swayed now,
yeah.
Have incorporated a probably 80% raw diet themselves.
Wow.
Because I'm 61 years old, which is, you know, most people are surprised to hear that.
Yeah,
and I've been on a primarily raw food diet. I hate to say percentages, because I'm 100% raw most of the time, but not 100% of the time. And when I travel, I might be 50%.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but I'm certainly primarily raw and have been for 16 years. So that motivated them enough to give it a try in their own lives. And they felt a difference. And Visanto came to the school and did the whole training. And she got to meet people and watch their journeys. And she journaled it. And she heard their stories about why they were there also. That's all still all anecdotal. But that made her want to find the research. And we did some lab studies of our own. We studied a green smoothie and a green drink, and we were able to analyze, they have all the computer programs, so they could analyze my recipes and put them together in menus to see exactly what we are getting. We didn't use some of the new studies that haven't yet been in the peer-reviewed journals, like what happens when you soak almonds, for example. You know, the word right now is that when you soak almonds, you because of the what happens in the transition between the fats becoming amino acids that are easier to digest, that they're not as high in fat. But we didn't use those studies because they're not peer-reviewed yet. So when we said almonds in their raw state before they've been germinated, and therefore they're this much fat. And so
okay.
We had to really work with all of that. So we worked with the normal, what they say, this amount of nutrients for kale, whether it's organic or not. If it's organic, I believe, and I've read that there's more nutrients in organic, but there's not enough peer-reviewed study for us to prove that. It's not a diet, really. It's a lifestyle. But if you need to lose weight quick and you need to heal, here are some guidelines that can help you to do that. And so at least you feel like you've got support. And we've got all kinds of support in there, so including how to set up your raw food kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and how to know how to buy your produce and how to rotate your fruits and vegetables so they're always ripe, and how to store them, and all that kind of stuff that I mentioned that we can't possibly get into in a 1 hour interview.
We're gonna try.
Yeah.
What you mentioned, breads, and breads to me are something that we don't experiment with all. We do sprout some buckwheat and some sunflower seeds and kind of, you know, make a little almost granola out of them. But how would you turn something like that into a bread that's actually hearty and something that's real tasty?
Well, the ancient Essenes did it over 2,000 years ago. They took the sprouted grains. It was wheat or some relative of our hybridized wheat, and they sprouted it, they soaked it, they ground it, they formed it into loaves, and they put it on the hot rocks of the desert, and they baked their bread that way. So it was moist inside, it has a crust on the outside, and that's what we do, but we use a dehydrator. And rather than using rocks to grind the sprouted grain, we use a food processor and we pulse it. You know, so we do it a modern way. We can add other things to it if we want, you know. Yeah, if you want to balance out the sweetness of, because it's actually quite sweet when you sprout wheat. And I actually prefer kamut. They're a sprouted, unleavened bread, that are grain bread, that has been slightly ground, not totally pulverized, because then it would be too gooey and mushy and not so great, but still has texture. And then you put it in the dehydrator, turn it up for enough, maybe an hour, to about 135, just so it gets a nice crust on it. Then you turn it down to 105 for about another 5 to 6 hours, so you can break it and it's chewy, and you can spread yummies on it, whatever you like to spread on your bread, or make a sandwich out of it, and it's quite delicious. I don't know when you were at our Vibrant Living Expo if you had any of our sandwiches, but we make a thin bread, mm-hmm. also using kamut, and you can put all kinds of herbs or onions or anything that you want in it. Spread it out almost like you would a cracker, but a little bit thicker. And then just dehydrate it for a few hours and slice and cut it. And you have bread that looks like slices of bread. Mm-hmm. An unleavened, looks like a pumpernickel kind of bread.
Like a German bread.
Yeah, like a German pumpernickel. Mm-hmm. And it's quite delicious. And we also make breakfast breads out of it, like scones. You want to add some, say, pecans and dates and orange peel or orange zest or something like that, or put cranberries in it, and make scones, and those are delicious. You can make cinnamon rolls. It's basically the same thing, but you just shape it any different way you want and add any other ingredients that you want.
One thing I wanted to ask you is, do you teach about intention and kind of clear mind when you're prepping food? And can you explain that? Can you talk about that?
We sure do. Yeah. It's really important for us to teach the connection between love and the, not just the health benefits of putting love, the intention of love in the food, but also how it affects the recipient in terms of even just being able to sense the beauty of it and the desire for it. And I've had lots of experiences, too many experiences, even more stories about how that is affected by people. I mean, there are now books written about how important it is to infuse love into even water. I mean, they even have books about infusing water with love.
So you said before you have 4 businesses, and my question is, how do you deal with stress? What's your solution?
My solution to stress, you know, as I said, I really just hang on all the appreciation that I get, and that fuels me so much. But I have to say that I know every day I'm grateful for the fact that I eat raw food. I could never do everything that I do without being on the program that I'm on. And when I say program, it's what I was saying earlier. I have wheatgrass, a double shot every morning. I have E3 Live every morning, 4 ounces of E3 Live, which is blue-green algae, for people who don't know what that is. I have super green foods, and my favorite one is Vitamineral Green. I have it in a green smoothie every morning. And then I have a big, tall green juice with lots of kale and parsley and all the good greens in it. Then I have a huge salad every day at lunch. And I really like to eat pretty simply, although, you know, when I'm at the school and we're having richer foods, I'll eat small amounts of the richer foods. I don't have a real sweet tooth, but oftentimes I'll have tastes of the desserts that the students make. So it's really my diet that keeps me that way, and I don't eat late at night. I can't eat late at night because 5 or 6 hours sleep is all I can really afford, and be able to get up early in the morning and work some more. And that just keeps me going, that and all the love, all the love and appreciation, and that's what fuels me. So I never really feel stressed out. I just feel grateful.
Yeah, and what's the trick to not picking at the food while you're cooking it?
Well, you know, I teach our students how to, this sounds very strange to somebody who's not a chef, but taste and spit.
Interesting.
You taste the food, because you have to taste test food, yeah. Because even if you're following a recipe, it doesn't matter. You can follow the recipe every time. It's going to taste different every time, because your pepper is never going to be the same. Your tomato is never going to be the same. You always have to taste test your food and flavor balance it. And so you have to taste test, but then if you taste it, if you swallow it, then your appetite can be stimulated and you'll end up eating more.
Yeah.
So I taste and I spit it out. And I don't eat until I'm ready to eat. And you shouldn't really eat until you're hungry. And if you're eating little bits every, you know, all the time, then you eat because you think you should. So I don't eat while I make food.
Yeah.
Not actually eat. I just taste.
That's a great tip for people who have dinner parties and, you know, they're preparing their meals and they're eating it and eating it, and then suddenly they sit down and like, I'm not hungry anymore.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I want to sit down and enjoy food with my guests.
Yeah, that's great.
And thanks for your warm welcome. Yes, we are going to be exploring ethnic flavors today. And today we are visiting the Mediterranean region of the world. There are many wonderful regions that we can visit, and we visit them all in our class called Ethnic Flavors, Living Light, which is a class that is specifically designed for graduates of our chef training program so that they can explore recipe development and how that fits into the different ethnic cuisines. And it's a really great class that everyone really loves. And today I'm going to be exploring some of the dishes that we prepare in our deli that are ethnically linked to the Mediterranean. So we're going to be doing a dish that I particularly love. We call it the Great Greek Salad. And what it really is it's pretty much the same as dolmas, except that we don't take the time to roll the dolmas. So it's a much faster and easier way to serve the dish, and yet and it has all the flavors, including the grape leaves. So that's kind of fun, and you'll see that on page one of your packet. And we will be also creating a wonderful hummus. How many of you have had our no bean hummus that was created by one of our chefs, Matt Samuelson? And the way that it was created was, one time we were at Brighton Bush Hot Springs and we were making chickpea hummus, and we had been making chickpea hummus for years, and everybody loved our sprouted chickpea hummus, but the problem was that they ate too much of it, and then everybody suffered in the presence of each other because the legumes are rather hard to digest. Need I say more? Okay. So we had all these leftover ingredients, and we all wanted to have hummus, but we really hesitated to have it because we had to teach. So Matt just put all these zucchini ends in the blender with a whole lot of other supplies that we had left over from making the hummus, which was, of course, lemon juice and tahini and garlic and so forth. And he made this fabulous hummus. And I said, get rid of the chickpea hummus. This is the only hummus that we're going to serve from now on. So I'm going to show you how to make that as well. None of these ingredients take very long to prepare. That's one of the reasons why I chose it. And there's only one thing that really must be made in advance. Well, perhaps two if you count sprouting. But really, both of these things are similar to sprouting. This is what we call blooming. And this is wild rice that has not been cooked, but it's been bloomed. I'm going to pass this wild rice around. Everybody can take a chance to feel it. We're not going to use it again, so that you can see what wild rice really looks like and feels like and smells like. I'm a tactile person. I want to put my hands in everything. So I thought it might be helpful for you to look at it. Oftentimes when people serve wild rice in a restaurant, it's very little wild rice, and the rest of it is regular rice. This is all wild rice, and wild rice is something that is wild-crafted. It's wild-crafted in marshland, usually by Indians, and it's done in the traditional way. Because of the fact that we don't cook, what we do is we soak it. And different wild rices take different amounts of time to bloom. When I say bloom, what I mean is that they explode. They open up, and then they are palatable. Otherwise, they're just too crunchy. The fact is that wild rice is not a rice at all. It's a seed. It's actually a seed. So it's not a starchy rice, but it's very satisfying. It's as satisfying as rice is. Some wild rice is raw. Some of it has been lightly passed over a flame to be roasted so that it opens more easily. So what you'll find is that you can, and you won't know necessarily which is which, but you can buy the rice, and if you soak it for a couple of days and it doesn't start to bloom, then it's probably raw, and it may take as much as 9 days for it to bloom, to soften. And so I usually have wild rice that's softened because it does take a long time. I usually have it already bloomed, and I keep it in my refrigerator. And I'm going to tell you right now how to bloom wild rice. So if you've never done this before, it's important for you to understand that wild rice is not something that sprouts in the traditional way. In other words, you don't soak it for 8 hours, drain it, rinse it, drain it, and let it stay drained or sprouting for a half a day while it starts to grow and germinate, and then rinse it again and continue to let it sprout and so forth. That's the way you normally would sprout. But with wild rice, its medium of growth is in water. I mean, that's the way it grows. So you have to keep it in water. You put it in water, you let it for 24 hours, you change the water, put fresh water in it, and leave it in water, and continue to leave it in water until it blooms, always rinsing it every 24 hours. And then once it's bloomed, rinse it, change the water again, and store it in the refrigerator in water. And you can change the water every 2 or 3 days once it's in the refrigerator, and you can leave it in there for a couple of weeks. So you can always have wild rice if you want to make it at a moment's notice. And there are so many wonderful flavors of wild rice salads. There's any number of wild rice salads that you can make. You can make this Mexican style, and we do this Mexican style in the school, just as if it were Mexican rice. You can do it as Asian rice, and we do it as Asian rice in the school, with shiitake mushrooms and sesame oil and wonderful flavors of Asia. There's just no limit to the different flavors that you can give wild rice, because it doesn't have much flavor of its own. It's texture. That's what it is. It provides a great texture, and it will be a sponge for whatever flavor you want. I have a question here. Okay, that's a good question. What does it look like when it blooms? I don't know if you can see this or not. I'm going to pass some around that's already bloomed, and you can see the difference between that and this. I'll pour this out because I don't want that anyway. All right, let's pass this around. And then you can see what I mean when I say it's bloomed. You'll see that just like when it's cooked, it opens up. It splits open, and the white part underneath, inside, is exposed. Diane?
Is there any quicker way to do the wild rice, like in the dehydrator?
You can. If you keep it warm, it will bloom faster. So if you know how long your rice normally takes, you can speed it up by 2 or 3 days if you put it in the dehydrator. Some people say that if you put probiotics in the water, it will bloom faster, but my experience has not indicated that. I tried it and it didn't work. So, and it wasn't, my probiotics were just fine. So I'm starting out, this was one cup of wild rice. And so now I'm just going to add the rest of my ingredients. I'm going to add some diced tomatoes. Now I want my tomatoes to be fairly small dice, not large dice. I need to have a small bowl that I can pour off some of this liquid. I want it to be a small dice because the rice is small. If I put large pieces of tomato in here, what's going to happen is the rice is going to fall to the bottom. I'm going to have all this tomato. Thank you, dear. And I'm not going to get the perfect bite. You know what the perfect bite is? A little bit of everything. There's a reason in some salads you don't want a perfect bite. You want to taste a big piece of tomato and a big piece of cucumber. In fact, horiatiki is that way. You have horiatiki, you have big chunks of different things, and you get to bite it with a piece of feta cheese, which in this case, of course, is almond feta, or a piece of lettuce and a piece of onion, however you know, different ways. But with the perfect bite, you want a little bit of everything. So this has been sitting for a little while, and it's accumulated a bit more liquid than I want. And now I'm going to add my tomatoes. And this was 2 cups of Roma tomatoes. I'm also going to add 2 cups of finely diced zucchini. And again, this is a fine dice. For those of you who don't feel confident with the difference between a dice and a chop and a julienne and a chiffonade and all the other kinds of chef techniques, come to our school. And when you leave, you will be completely confident with knives, with your knife skills and all the differences, so that when you read recipes, you know exactly what the chef had in mind. All right, I'm also going to add a half a cup of olive oil, and this, of course, is organic olive oil. You can cut back on the amount of olive oil if you want to. This is rather a rich dish, but then this is going to serve a lot of people. So half a cup of olive oil is 4 ounces, which means it's 8 tablespoons, and I would expect you would serve at least 12 people, really, with that many tablespoons of oil. This says 6 to 8 tablespoons, but you're going to see it actually makes quite a bit. That would be if this were all you were eating. And it is quite satisfying. I'm also going to add half a cup of pine nuts. Now, as you know, they eat a lot of pine nuts in the Middle East. They eat a lot of pine nuts, but also in the Mediterranean. And so I'm going to just roughly chop these. I don't want them to be finely chopped, and I don't even mind if there's a few whole pine nuts in there. It's kind of nice to bite into a pine nut. So, I wouldn't suggest that you pulse this in a food processor because you don't want it to turn to pine nut butter, which it could do very easily. Okay. There are my pine nuts. And I'm going to add both orange juice and lemon juice to this. Why do you think I'm adding orange juice? I want a little bit of sweetness to balance out the lemon juice. Dolmas are traditionally served with a little bit of lemon garlic sauce, and yet the lemon can be a little bit overpowering, so we can add more acid, yet a sweeter acid, by using orange juice. So we're doing that. And we're adding some more sweetness here, and I'm using currants. Many dolmas recipes have currants in them. I prefer them to raisins. Sometimes you'll find raisins in the dolmas recipes, but I really prefer just a tiny little bite of the sweetness rather than the big raisins. So I'm using currants here, not very many. I did my best to break them apart because I don't want any big clumps. Okay. And just that little bit, a quarter cup of raisins, are going to make a huge difference, even though really I had about 3 cups of bloomed rice, because 1 cup of wild rice makes about 3 cups of bloomed rice. So I already had 3 cups of that. I had 2 cups of Roma tomatoes. That's 5 cups. I had 2 cups of zucchini. So now we have 7 cups, and there's only a quarter of a cup of currants. Not much. But if you have one little bite in each mouthful, that's enough. Just that one little bite. Okay. I'm also going to add, I'm going to show you how I'm adding my grape leaves here. And the grape leaves really do add a nice flavor to our dolmas. I think I'll leave one behind just so that I can show you how it would be rolled, too. You want to see how I would roll them? Of course you do. You can buy grape leaves. You know, I have not been able to find a source for organic grape leaves, unfortunately. We're talking to some different vineyards to start supplying us with them so we can actually sell them, because I've had a hard time finding them. Does it matter what grape it comes from? You know, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that this is going to be rather a tough one. I'm not even sure I want to put it in there. We'll see if we need it. I'm going to leave it out. That's a big one, isn't it? That'd cover a lot. Okay. Excuse me, I couldn't help my... I don't know what I was thinking. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do something that's called a chiffonade. I'm actually rolling this together, and I'm going to just chop these very finely. So it cuts, it makes a ribbon, a very fine shredded ribbon. And you'll notice that as I do this, my hands are literally walking, my fingers are walking back, and my knuckles are forward so that I can't hurt myself. I'm slowing down so you can see the action. My knuckles are forward so I can't cut myself. That's very important. Now I can go back through and just give it one cut. I don't need to, that is tough, okay. I don't need to have really super long shreds, so that's why I gave it a cut. And then I can just unroll them, just like that. And I'm going to leave them fairly long. I just cut them in half, but they don't need to be as long as they were. They're almost spaghetti-like, they're so long. And you could cut them even shorter if you wanted to, but I kind of like the look of them. Grape leaves are raw, and they're just packed in a brine of salt. You do have to be careful. Some grape leaves do have sodium benzoate in them, but most of them don't. Most of them are just in a brine of salt. We rinse them very well to get the salt out, by the way, because it's normal sodium chloride. You know, we use the crystal salt for everything. I wouldn't touch the table salt. In fact, I'm working on a book right now called The Raw Food Diet. Feast, lose weight, gain energy, stay young. Got something there for everyone. And I'm collaborating with two nutritionists who are very adamant about the importance of getting iodine in the body. And so they were concerned that I was not using table salt, but instead was using another form of salt. And I absolutely refuse to change my recipes. I don't believe in using table salt at all. So we found different ways of getting iodine in the body, natural ways. Tune in. The book should be done and out early next year. Okay, so those are the grape leaves. And I'm also going to use some fresh parsley. I have fresh parsley here that's already been minced for me. You can use more or less of any of these items that you want, just depending on what you'd like. Here's some scallions. I love scallions in my very flavorful dolmas. And here I have dill. I guess we're using dried dill today. We must have been out of fresh dill. Yeah, that's dill, all right. So fresh dill is actually preferable. And we have fresh oregano and garlic. Here's the garlic. Now, garlic is an absolutely important ingredient. How many of you love garlic? Okay, there are a few of you who don't care so much for garlic. So we'll leave a little bit in there. How's that? Okay, and we're also going to use crystal salt. This is Himalayan crystal salt. We have some black pepper, a teaspoon of black pepper. You could use fresh ground pepper if you wanted to. And I'm going to mince this oregano a little bit more. I like fresh oregano, but I don't like to bite into pieces of oregano. Just not my favorite thing to do. Some people really love it, but I love it, but I want it to have a more subtle flavor. This is called fanning and mincing. It's called mincing, but the technique is fanning. Okay. You notice that I don't use my knife to scrape up anything because I don't want to dull my blade. Okay. So that's all of it, I believe. I'm going to just mix it up now. And of course, you could mix it all up with your hands if you wanted to. If you weren't here, I probably would be doing that. I love to commune with my food. Oh, this smells so good. This is one of my favorite new dishes. This just looks like seaweed, doesn't it? Yes. I usually do mince this a little bit more, so I'm kind of playing with the idea of chiffonading it because it will hold the salad together very nicely, I think.
Sure.
Yes.
While you're mixing, can I ask a question? If you don't have currants on hand, can you chop some raisins?
You can definitely.
Yes,
you can definitely chop the raisins if you don't have currants. And if you're all looking for a place to find organic dried currants, you can get them from sunorganicfarms.com.
The other question was, for those of us who don't like a strong garlic, can we substitute a little powder?
Could you substitute what for garlic?
A little garlic powder instead.
Oh, you could use, that's a very good suggestion, Diane. Yes, of course you may use you can leave the garlic out entirely if you just plain don't like garlic, or you can use dried garlic, either granulated or powdered dried garlic, and that will definitely give you a more subtle garlic flavor, as little or as much as you want. So I'm not sure whether the chiffonading of the grape leaves was a great idea or not. I'm making sure that I've got a little bit of everything in there, but we'll see. It seems to want to get caught around my. Okay, now I'm going to show you how to roll the dolmas. First of all, I'm going to make sure that there's no little nub here. There isn't, but sometimes there's a little stem right there. You need to cut that off. And you want the stem side to be up. Well, this is the long one. I want to show you on a tender one. Here we go. Besides that, that one is too easy to roll. It's too big. I want to show you one on more likely the size that you would be using, which is the only fair thing to do. Okay, so I'm flattening it out. Now remember, we have rinsed these really well. They've been rinsed and rinsed and rinsed in warm water to get all that awful sodium chloride out of there. Now it's all flat, and all I have to do is take a spoon of the filling. Normally, though, if you were to make these dolmas, you wouldn't be adding all the tomatoes. You would just be adding the rice with all of the herbs and seasonings. The tomatoes are what make it into a salad, really. So one good spoon of it, you fold one side over and then the other side over, and then just kind of gather it together, lift the bottom part up, roll it like so. You might have to tuck the ends in just a tiny bit as you go, and then you have your little dolma. Just that simple. Put it here so you can see it. See how easy that is? And now if you wanted to, you could brush it with more garlic oil or just regular olive oil if you wanted to make it shiny, and it will soften the leaves a little bit more too. You could put it in the dehydrator for a few minutes and warm it if you wanted to serve it as a warm dolma. But they're really great just out of the refrigerator too. So I'm going to just serve up a little bit of this for you. I'll serve have the dolma right next to the salad. And then you can see somebody's having a great time out there. Isn't it wonderful? So happy. That makes me so happy to hear people having a good time. I'm going to move this out to the front here so you can all take a look at it. There you go. And there we have great Greek salad. Thank you. Okay. And my lovely assistants over there are going to plate some of that up for you. Ideally, we would have that salad marinate for 2 to 3 hours before serving it so that the flavors can really marry. That's the way I like to think of it. It's a romantic experience between the flavors. And, okay, we're leaking a little there. I'm going to turn that around so you don't see it. You don't know it's there. Okay, now, next we're going to make a quinoa salad. So another very simple salad. This is my answer to tabbouleh. I love tabbouleh, but I don't like wheat. Wheat does not feel good to me. I'm going to turn this over, actually. Wheat, actually, it tastes good to me, but I don't feel good after I eat it. It makes me feel plugged up here. I get stiff joints after eating it a couple times in a row. When I was in my 30s, I thought I had carpal tunnel. And when I stopped eating cooked food and the cooked starches went, all of a sudden my carpal tunnel went away. I thought, how interesting. I started easing back into cooked foods a little bit, and my carpal tunnel came back. Not only that, but I noticed that something that I had for years that I had not really given much attention to was stiff joints, particularly in my fingers, in these three fingers. And when I would eat bread a couple days in a row, thinking, oh, I'm eating all raw food, except when I go to a salad bar, I'll eat some bread. And I'd start to get stiff joints again. When I don't eat starches, it doesn't happen. So for those of you who think, well, I'm getting older now, so of course I'm going to have some aches and pains. Well, I'm 58 and I don't have them anymore. I had them when I was 30. So it's not about age. All right, so this is my answer to tabbouleh, and it's made from sprouted quinoa. And quinoa is an ancient grain, And it's actually very easy to digest because genetically we're really more able to digest it. And furthermore, we sprout it. Quinoa is the easiest thing there is to sprout. If you mist it with water, just try to keep it from sprouting. It sprouts so easily that it continues to sprout in the refrigerator. Once you've stopped rinse, once you've soaked it, you drain the water out, you put it in the refrigerator, and it'll keep on sprouting. So don't sprout it too soon. Sprout it about 24 hours before you want to use it. That's all. Soak it for six to eight hours, sprout it for 6 to 8 hours, and you've got it. This is sprouted perfectly. I think I'll just pass a little bit of this around so you can see what it means to be sprouted perfectly. I'm going to need another little dish in my tactile needs here. Okay, so I'm going to pour in the quinoa first. I guess you could just look at this big dish. That's not so, I don't know. Okay, so we're going to start with our quinoa, our sprouted quinoa. And this was 1.5 cups to begin with. It doesn't get a whole lot bigger than it was, but that's certainly more than 1.5 cups. It's about 3 cups, so it kind of doubled, whereas the wild rice triples. Right. And I'm going to add lots of parsley because quinoa is a parsley salad. So we're going to add lots of parsley. And we'll add some tomatoes, again diced. And I'm going to, let's see, make sure. Actually, I think that the juice in this would be just fine. So if it's as juicy, that's good. Some diced tomatoes. And also some seeded and finely diced cucumbers. The reason I want these more finely diced than the tomatoes is because cucumbers are heavier, and they'll really drop to the bottom of the pan, of the bowl, if we have them the same size as the cucumbers. But we really want the texture of those. And again, because this is Mediterranean, we have to have olive oil in there. However, if you want to stay off of the oils, just leave it out. Just don't even put that there. Okay. I'm also going to add, again, some green onions. These are some of the similar flavors. One of the things that people learn in our classes when they're doing the ethnic flavors classes is that there are certain seasonings that you use in different countries. And yet, how you put them together is what makes them unique. You can eat several dishes that are all made from the same ingredients, but because they're put together differently, they all seem unique. That's so great. So here we also have some fresh mint. I love mint in tabbouleh. And we're going to put something that is very important to this particular dish, and it is garam masala. Garam masala, it, like curry, is a mixture of seasonings. It's not just one thing. It's got clove and cinnamon and cumin and all kinds of wonderful dishes that are present in Mediterranean cooking. And you can purchase garam masala at just about any health food store that has bulk seasonings. And this is an organic combination here. And here we have Himalayan salt again. I'm going to back off on the salt a little bit on this and give it a taste test. And more garlic. And this is calling for 3 cloves of garlic. So I'm just going to leave a little bit out, make those of you happy that I tried. Okay, and what else have we missed? Well, we've missed something that I really like to have in this. It's something that adds texture as well as flavor, but something that isn't necessary if you want to do without it, and that is seasoned cashews. Now, you can leave them out or you can add just a little bit less than I do. It's up to you. The seasoned cashews are made very simply. I'm going to show you how to make them right now before I add them to this dish so you can see. Would somebody like to finish stirring this for me? One of my assistants over there, Nancy? Yeah, great. I'm going to show you how I make the seasoned cashews. Very hard to do. We have cashews. We have tamari. Garlic powder. Okay, we're rather humid here in Fort Bragg, and so consequently our garlic powder tends to get a little crusty. There we go, garlic powder. Onion powder. And I'm adding a tiny bit of cayenne, just a pinch. This is not super hot cayenne. It's not super hot. BTUs, or whatever the measurement is that they use to measure heat. And I'll just now toss this. Ideally, I would have this in a little larger bowl. Be a little easier to toss. But just toss it well. And then all we have to do is put it on a dehydrator tray. And we use the Excalibur dehydrators here, although you could use any kind of dehydrator for this particular application. And dehydrate it until it has all of the seasonings have dried completely. It doesn't take more than about 8 hours. And then you can keep these on hand and use them for any kind of dish that normally would require peanuts, particularly salted or seasoned peanuts. I like to put it on something like pad thai or any of those dishes where you want something crunchy on top, any of the Thai dishes particularly where you would normally have peanuts. And so I'm going to put that aside, and we will put that on our dehydrator later. And for now, I'm going to take the tabbouleh, which isn't ready yet. You've already started serving the tabbouleh. Okay. And that's okay. I love to have overzealous assistants. And they're great. They want to help. And I'll give you some chop so that you can put these, just sprinkle it a little bit on top, and that'll be just fine. Because really, that's the way it normally would be. I have a question?
Yes, Sherry.
Yes.
Cashews
do not need to be soaked in dehydrators because they don't contain any enzyme inhibitors, and they're not really going to grow. They're not really going to germinate anyway. However, we do soak them if we want to have a very creamy cheese or dish, like, for example, if we were making a cheesecake. You wanted to know about that vanilla cheesecake, didn't you? So the cheesecake is made from soaked cashews. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to put those in, and I'll give you a little bit to sprinkle on top of the ones that you already plated. Here you are. Thank you. And I'll just mix these in. You can mix them in or you can sprinkle them on top. It really doesn't matter. Okay, so there's our tabbouleh. And I'm going to just put a little bit of this on a plate for you so you can see what that would look like plated. I would put this on a lettuce leaf probably to give it some, make it pretty. It's kind of late now, that's all right. You can go ahead and take that. And I'll put a couple of strategically placed nuts right on top. And there we have our little tabbouleh starter. And we served it as a starter in that case. Okay. And the next thing that we're going to do, how did you like that? What do you think? Good. I always want to leave time for applause, you know. Okay. So next we're going to do another dish that is a favorite in our deli and a favorite with all of our students, and that is our hummus. And I have, right here. I'm using a Vitamix, but truly you do not have to have a Vitamix or a high-powered blender for this. You can use a regular blender. In this case, I have soaked sesame seeds because sesame seeds do have enzyme inhibitors, and we want to get rid of the bitterness. Even though it's the toxins that are in the skins of many of these nuts and seeds that we literally soak away. When we call them enzyme inhibitors, there are some enzyme inhibitors in there, but mostly, even maybe more than anything, it's the flavor. It's bitter, and we don't want that. In as a culinary artist, we don't want that in our food. Okay, so I'm going to start by putting all of our ingredients in. I have peeled the zucchini because we don't want green hummus. You could use yellow zucchini if you want. That would work just fine. And here I have some lemon juice. And again, olive oil. These are all just the same ingredients that we've used throughout, aren't they? These are Mediterranean ingredients. We have some garlic. And the garlic is going to go right into the Vitamix hole. We don't have to worry about smashing it or anything else. There it is. We have some cumin, which is an important ingredient in hummus. Just a little bit of cayenne, just to give it a little bit of an after bite. And a lot of paprika. Paprika is an important ingredient here. Some salt. And that's crystal salt, of course. And we're going to start with that. Once we have that, then we'll add the last two ingredients, which are tahini and the sesame seeds. So excuse me for a moment while I turn this on. I'm turning it on low to start, and then I'm going to increase it more and more as the water content of the zucchini is released. Going to add my tahini and the sesame seeds. There we go, and this is a beautiful organic tahini from Living Tree. Living Tree makes the best organic tahini, I believe. And they also have black tahini, which is a lot of fun. If you're making something like, just about anything that uses sesame seeds and you want something special to sprinkle over the top, the black sesame seeds are great. And we make a halva, a black and white halva, that is made with white, the regular tan sesame, the tahini, and then black sesame tahini, and marble it together. It's really fun. Okay, so now we're going to blend this. I need one lettuce leaf. Did you hear that sound? It got a little air bubble in it. So what you have to do then is get rid of the air bubble. And you can do that a lot of different ways. And then turn it on again, and the vortex will start again. You hear that? Now it's actually moving again. Looking for a nice smooth texture on this, and this is lovely. I'm going to cut a little piece off of it, though. Even though I like this piece, it will fit better in my display. And I'm going to just serve a little bit of this on a leaf, and then I'm going to turn the rest of it over to my assistants over there so that they can plate the rest of it for you. I don't want to take too much away from you. So, and they're just going to put it in a pastry bag so they can squirt it on, which is even better. And what would be really nice here is a little bit of tomato and some sprouts. That would be lovely. But this is what we have for you today. And you can just roll that up. It's actually quite nice, rolled up like so. There you have it. Your Nobu Mama. Thank you very much. And we have plates that are going to go around.
Thanks for listening to this Rockathon interview. There are 14 others that are just as personal and just as powerful. So please go ahead and keep listening. If you're listening to this and haven't purchased the Rockathon archives yet, you can do so at www.rockathon.com. That's www.rawkathon.com. Again, thanks for listening and have an amazing day.